I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jeffrey Shaw. It's ironic that the guy who spent 30 years bringing life into focus as one of the country's most sought-after portrait photographers is now freeing creative entrepreneurs around the world to leverage their so-called lack of focus. But then again, who better to do so than someone who truly knows what it means to be successful as a creative warrior? Business coach and speaker Jeffrey Shaw encourages entrepreneurs to use their natural creative strengths to build businesses that are profitable and fulfilling so they can make a living doing what they love. He's also the host of the popular podcast Creative Warriors, often ranked as one of iTunes' hottest business podcasts. A contributor to the Huffington Post, Jeffrey is also the creator of the online training program, The Creative Warrior Unleashed, and has been cited in various publications and trade journals. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, David, thrilled to be here with you. Thank you.
So, you know, the book Start With Why by Simon Sinek is a very popular book and also very popular TED Talk. Why do you think that the concept that Simon talks about isn't enough to smash a plateau?
Well, I think you're referring to something I mentioned somewhere that says the why isn't enough, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on that. Well, first of all, let's say, I mean, Simon's amazing. And his TED Talk, which I think is the third most popular of all time, was one of those moments for me when I literally was jumping up and down in my living room watching this, thinking, oh my gosh, somebody's speaking what's in my head. Like, where did this guy come from? So I find his work is amazing. However, I think things evolve, right? And I think one thing we're seeing in the world of personal development and mindset shifts is people want more tangible results. I think we've gone through several years of really good inspiration, motivation, and helping people get in touch with their why. What I'm sensing now is people want us as leaders and as coaches, they want us to step, and speakers, they want us to step up and not just help them with the understanding, but also give them strategy, tell them what to do with it. So that's why I've kind of taken the position that, excuse me, that a why isn't enough. It's why and apply, right? Find your why, but I actually like to get underneath it. First of all, something I do differently as a coach than most coaches that I know of is I want concrete proof as to why you believe your why is your why. I want concrete proof. Like, let's really get underneath that because that's where the commitment comes from. And then I like to help people strategize. That's why I'm a business coach, because I'm a capitalist at heart. I like to see entrepreneurs succeed wildly, because when they succeed, they get even better at what they do. So I'm a pretty action-oriented guy, and I'm very much into strategy. So I want you to know your why, and then I want you to make $1 million off of it, right? Not because, you know, you're out to just make $1 million, because it's representative of the impact you're making once you identify your why.
Hmm. How important do you think it is, Jeffrey, to be able to measure financial gain as part of applying your why?
You know, gosh, money is such a fascinating issue to me. I look at money and finances energetically more than anything, right? I mean, it's an energetic exchange. It's people's acknowledgement for what they feel you deliver to them. I also see, you know, the energy of money as a very useful tool in business. So, for example, as a portrait photographer for many years, I'm very high end. I serve a very high end affluent clientele, and so I charge a lot of money for what I do, which immediately already is playing with the energy of money, right? I have no problem stating my value, right? Because I make sure the people I work with don't equate the dollars spent with the tangible evidence, which is photographs. I want them to equate their investment to what transformation that's going to offer in their life, what it really means to have portraits of your children. So that's one thing. I get paid up front. My clients pay all the money up front. And I do that because money creates commitment. The energy of giving someone a lot of money causes both parties, myself and my clients, to show up at 120% because we're all in, right? Plus, I know that what I deliver is emotional. And at the time of delivery, I don't want the energy of money interfering with the pure joy of it. right? So, I have just learned over my 33 years in entrepreneurship to look at money as an energetic exchange, and also just an identifier and equal to the impact, because I actually focus more on the impact. Right, especially now at this point in my life and having the podcast, I'm more interested in looking at what's the impact I can make and know that the money will follow.
Do you think what most businesses deliver is emotional?
I think they should. Actually, a big part of the work I do is called emotional branding. I think you can take almost any business that has, even if it has a tangible result. What I most enjoy doing as a coach is helping people identify what is the emotion under the work that they do. What's different than it? Because when things become tangible, it's so easy in today's world to become a commodity. So I'll give you a quick example. I had somebody reach out to me for coaching who is in the business of credit card processing. Now, normally that's not a client I would take, because I work specifically with businesses that are a little more creative or a little less, linear or statistical, if you will. So at first blush, it wasn't really a client I thought would be a good fit for me. But what I was interested in, the more I spoke to him about what he did, is that he saw himself as a credit card processor, as a liaison between himself and small businesses. And what he was really interested in doing was helping small businesses succeed. Now we have something intangible which we can market and expand his business on. That's what I'm always interested in digging for, because I think it's cliche. You can't put a value on something that's intangible. And in today's world, that's coaches, most of us content creators, so often we're selling something that's intangible. But what the value is and what the transformation is that can offer.
Right. So I'm also wondering, as I'm thinking about this concept, is there a way to take most businesses and change the payment system to one that is upfront, so that when the delivery of the offering when that transformation happens, you're not dealing with paying for emotional results?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't want to make any generalizations, because it's all different business. In the same way that, just because my business was built on a high end, there's a whole different psychology. If you're, for example, an app developer and you're selling something for 99 cents, right? It's a different psychology. But again, what is that 99 cents that app really represent? This is actually, I guess you could say, my views on the future of entrepreneurship. So it's kind of a long way going about answering your question, but the way I see the world shifting by and large is that we are all looking to spend more time with people that we love, and we want to spend more time doing what we love. As in the years ahead, I think we as a society are going to be turning to small businesses and innovators for solutions to those problems. Like, what solution do you have? If it's an app, what solution does that app offer for 99 cents that will help me get some of my life back? Right? That's something millions and millions of people will buy, because that's what most people are looking for. They're looking to regain their life back. Right? Now, what I did on the high end was, I didn't have to work with as many people. So I don't know that it matters, or I don't believe that it matters whether it's high end or low end or anything in between. I think there's always a psychology of emotion, and that's what I suggest people dig for more than anything, is how can you translate what you do into something that's more of an emotional hook, if you will, that can get people compelled. That's why I call it emotional branding. Like, how can you reorient the branding of your business so that what you're selling is the various emotions, whether it's transformation or hope, whatever it is that you're selling, but what's the emotion behind it?
Are there some basic questions that we should be asking ourselves to try to understand what the emotions are that we're selling?
The key to all of this, and this is sort of my sweet spot as a coach and a speaker, is what I call the secret language. Right? It's to understand what the secret language is of the market you want to reach. And often that means transporting ourselves into their world. So again, I'll give you another quick example. When I started out as a portrait photographer, I started out 20 years old, went back to my hometown, which was a tiny little town in upstate New York, realized real quickly I was never going to succeed there. So I needed to find a market there where I would succeed, a market that was aligned with my feelings of high value, high price. So of course, I realized that would be an affluent market. The problem was I didn't know anything about the affluent market. I grew up lower middle class. I knew nothing about, you know, the way rich people thought, what their habits were, what their mindset was. So fancy stores in New York City, stores like Bergdorf Goodman and restaurants like Le Cirque, well, they became my places of education. I scraped together whatever money I could, and I would go to really expensive places. Just, you know, sometimes it was a matter of just getting in the door. Sometimes it was a matter of buying something. Sometimes it was a matter of having dinner at this, you know, at the someplace. But what I wanted to do is I was educating myself on how the world looked like from the perspective of the people I was going to serve. That to me is the most important thing you can do. If you're a 50-year-old app developer looking to develop an app for a 17-year-old, you have to get into their shoes, right? How do they think? What cues? That's what I mean by secret language. Like, what are some of the cues that you need to deliver? What's the language? What's the look? What are some of the cues that you need to put out there that are recognizable to the 17-year-old? Because we're often serving markets that aren't necessarily the market that we currently live in ourselves. But it's, if you want to succeed, it's our job to put ourselves in their perspective so that we can answer that question. What is it that they need to see?
Fascinating. How did you figure this out?
I figured it out because I said I was failing as a photographer at 20 years old. I gave it my best go for 2 years in my hometown. It was very obvious to me I wasn't gonna. You know, I was selling emotions. I was selling the emotions of what it meant to have family portraits and hand them down. And my wake up call was when a really nice woman actually said to me one day. She goes, "I don't have the luxury of worrying about my children's memories. I can't pay my mortgage." And I realized, wow, you can't, you know, I was just misaligned. I had the wrong idea. And again, this actually plays into a whole bigger philosophy of mine, which is most of us build our businesses backwards, right? We build the business and then try to squeeze people into the business. When the right way to build a business is to first know who you're going to design the business for and then to design it for them, know their secret language. I missed that boat. I was 20 years old. I give myself a break. But luckily, I figured it out 2 years later. Within 2 years, I realized I'm not going to succeed here because you can't sell luxury in a market that's worrying about paying their mortgage or their rent. So that led me to find the market that would. But the problem is I didn't understand them. So I, as to why, I don't know. I just had something deep inside of me in my gut. I was like, well, if I'm going to serve that clientele, I have to understand them. It's so simple. But the crazy thing is, from what I can tell, most people don't do it. But it's actually that simple. You have to know what it feels like to be the person you're going to serve.
Yeah, I think most people don't do it. Most people don't talk enough or don't talk at all to prospective customers before they try to create what they're going to sell.
Yeah, like I said, I think most businesses are built backwards. You know, we are upside down. We have a great idea. We create the idea. We build the business. And then we run around trying to find people to fit into the business when we missed the earlier step, which was to figure out who you want to serve for, understand their secret language, what makes them tick, understand what sales techniques, you know, trigger for them, what's familiar to them, and then, you know, build a business for them. And then they find you.
So what are some great examples of businesses that have been built the right way by understanding who they want to serve and learning the secret language?
Well, truthfully, you know, I'm sure it's mostly my experience as a business coach, but I have to say, in a way, it's my preference. And that is that most people come to me after they're a few years in. You know, I don't work with a lot of startups. Not that I wouldn't enjoy it, not that I wouldn't be effective, but the fact of the matter is most people, when they're starting a business, don't seek it. They don't necessarily seek coaching. They should. I actually, it's a sort of a dream of mine someday to align with banks and make business coaching part of bank loans for small businesses. It's because I would like to see creative entrepreneurs have more access to funds. And the banks are so tight for us. You know, the banks don't want to lend to us really small guys. And the reason is that the rate of risk is too high. Well, I'd like to change the risk, right? So if we can make it a part of the loan process that it's required they get 1 year of business coaching, we can increase the rate of success and therefore open up more opportunities for banks lending more money to small businesses. So sort of a dream of mine. But the point is most people don't start early enough. So I wind up working with a lot of people who have been out there for a few years. And it's actually really helpful. It's really helpful to know what what hasn't been working or where you're misaligned. Now, as an example of one that was built correctly, if you will, it would be my own, my business, my own coaching practice, because I've been coaching now for about 7 years. So I was 25, 26 years in as a creative person in business as a photographer. So I had learned so much. And I also had been a coaching client for 10 years up to that point. So when it came to building my coaching practice, I was very clear on who I was going to serve. I was going to serve creative warriors. I was going to serve people that are in business, trying to make a living, doing something that's a non-traditional business, what I call an uncommon business, right? Because when you're trying to offer the world something different than the normal, it's really, you know, you can't follow a lot of the traditional advice that's available. So those are the people I want to serve. That's the tribe, Creative Warriors. That's who I created my podcast for as well.
Mm. And is there an example that you've seen that you think is a good example of building a business the right way? Even if you're taking one that is already existing, but you are re-engineering it so that it follows the logic you just described. Mm-hmm. Where you're understanding who you want to serve, and then you try to learn the secret language.
Yeah. Gosh, you know, it's funny. It's actually the essence of probably almost all the work I do, such that it's almost hard to come up with a specific example. I think one of the things I see most misaligned is when one's brand image doesn't match their price point, right? So they're not... So that needs to be realigned in order for the business to be built for the right market, because their branding is actually drawing in the wrong people. So particularly when you actually are a high-end product or a high-end service, and the brand image is actually lower end. Right.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that way too often. I agree with you.
Way too often, right? We see that a lot too often. And then, you know, the business owner is frustrated and don't understand either why their conversions are low or why, you know, people come to, they don't get hired as often as they would like if they're in the service business. And that's usually the gap, right? So it's actually what they're putting out there is not drawing forward the right clients. So to realign the brand, it's all about secret language. I often tell my coaching clients that I'm skipping over them, right? They've hired me, they're paying me, but if you don't mind, I'm skipping over you and I'm imagining I'm your client and I'm going to feed you the information you need to know so that I'm attracted to you and hire you.
Yeah, I've seen it also where the misalignment has to do with pricing, that the business owner is pricing the service way too low for the market they're trying to serve. And there's a market value that's associated with pricing. It's part of the marketing strategy. People often miss that.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, there's a whole psychology to pricing. You know, it's whether you have, you know, if you have prices on your, if you're a restaurant, if you have prices on your menu at all, that implies something. If it's priced with a dollar sign, that says something else. If it's priced down to the 100th of a cent, that says something else, right? There's a whole psychology to pricing. And that also plays into that whole idea, the secret language. Like, do you know what's familiar and comfortable to the market you're going to serve? You're a high-end market. They like clean and simple. You're not going to price things at, you know, I'm offering this. And actually, I'll tell you a quick story. This is actually funny and silly. So when I went back to my hometown at 20 years old to start my photography business, I charged for an 8x10 photograph, I charged $48.02. Okay. Now, obviously, that's a really odd number, $48.02. Well, why? It's because when I was in photography school, we had the very few business courses we had taught us a formula. And you took your overhead and you took all these expenses and you multiplied it times a formula. And I took that advice verbatim. So here I was, you know, trying to sell the values of something high end to a market that didn't value what I was offering and charging what felt to them to be a lot of money for an 8x10, and yet it was priced as if it was Walmart, because Walmart charges, you know, $48.02, like a really weird number. If it was truly high end, it would have just been $50. right?
Of course.
So there was a whole mixed match of messages there. Like it was a higher price point than the market was willing to pay, but it was presented as if it was low end because it was rounded off at some weird number. So there's a whole psychology to pricing. But again, this is, you know, I would not have known. I grew up in the land of Kmart and Blue Light Specials, right? The clients I was going to serve never went there. I needed to understand what it looked like where they shopped. So that's why I went to these expensive stores in New York City, Ralph Lauren's flagship stores and places like that. I looked at the merchandising. I wanted to understand the psychology. I realized that, you know, prices are just rounded off. They're vague. Of course, Ralph Lauren, it's a designer name. At the time, my photography business was not in my own name. I changed that when I realized, oh, that's part of the secret language. Like, people are willing to pay more when the business is in your own name. It has a couture feeling to it. So I changed, right? So I changed it, my business, to my own name. All right. So that's the mindset, getting into the mindset of the people you want to serve. Those are all examples of how you end up building a business for the people you're going to serve.
Jeffrey, what's been some of the most transformational help that you've received in your leadership journey?
I have received many. You know, I at least have to acknowledge my very first coach, who I received coaching from 3 calls a month for 7 years. His name is Ron. So, you know, I can't help but always think about him because he was my first experience with that. And I, by the way, I hired him when I felt like I was at a plateau in my career. It was when I was making the most amount of money. It was easy. I had a huge staff and just didn't find it particularly exciting at that point. So that's why I reached out to a coach. I think the biggest turning point moment for me was in a leadership program I did coming upon 3 years ago now. And the big turning point moment was ownership. You know, it was putting humbleness aside, stop brushing off the compliments, listening to my peers, listening to the world around me who was telling me that I was good at something, that I was too eager to say, yeah, I know it, but, you know, yeah, I'll get around to it. And it was really stepping up and saying, you know, damn it, I'm going to own this. I am good at this. I am a good leader. I have a message. I can help creatives in business because I know what makes them tick. I can help them find the secret language of the market. That was a huge turning point moment for me. And actually, in particular, it was around the word conceit. I was working with a coach who was helping me work through how uncomfortable I was with the idea of conceit, because I had attached a very negative connotation to what it meant to be conceited. And so I had collapsed a whole bunch of things into conceit, like stay away from it, be humble, act humble. And the turning point moment as a leader for me was putting that aside and saying, you know, as Marianne Williams says so beautifully, you know, shrinking and playing it small doesn't serve anyone.
Why do you think it's so hard for many people to accept and own what they're best at?
You know, something I do with a lot of my coaching clients, and I can usually spot it in someone. Now, granted, the people, you know, I'm on the higher end as a business coach. So the people that reach out to me for coaching, they're serious and they're already amazing. You know, they're already amazing. So they're already bringing to me an amazing person. And because of that, one of the questions I love to ask them is, okay, look, we're going to put all BS aside. You're going to put all humbleness aside. Let me ask you something, and I want you to be honest with yourself and honest with me here. Have you always known from a very young age that you were amazing and that something incredible is going to come of your life? And they always say yes. They always know it, but haven't necessarily said it out loud. And I got the meaning to ask that question from listening to interviews with people like Oprah Winfrey and Richard Branson. And, you know, Oprah Winfrey really stands out as someone who, you know, in an abused environment, she will tell you today, and I've heard her say in interviews, that she knew she was amazing even then. She knew something was in store for her that was going to be incredible. And I actually believe that's the difference between those that really step up in a big way as leaders, is when they're willing to admit to themselves that, I know I'm amazing. I know I have skills. I don't have to go around telling everybody. It doesn't mean that you present yourself that way. It actually, that's the paradox of it. It's the admission of that that actually helps you put it aside and just do something with it in service of others.
With humility.
with humility. But that's the paradox of humility. It actually takes admitting that you know you've got a gift in order to put it aside to actually serve.
That's actually a really astute point, because the truth is we all have unique gifts.
And, absolutely.
And how do you understand what they are, articulate them, own them, and then be humble about using them?
Yeah. You know, I mean, here we are in your podcast, Smashing the Plateau, and I have a quote I use often of my own, and I offer to my clients, and it says, the gap between where you are and where you want to go is admitting what you're capable of. And I really believe it's that simple. You know, I mean, here we are, if we're on a plateau, we want to be somewhere else. We want to be beyond the plateau we're on. I believe the biggest gap, what's standing in your way, is simply admitting what you're capable of, that you're that good, that you're that capable, and then doing something. And I'll offer something to it, something else to it also, is that, and I think this will really help people listening, is often, and I know this as a creator, and as a creative person in business, often what we have that is of highest value to everybody else is actually the closest thing to us. It's probably the thing, the easiest thing in the world to you. And that is why sometimes it's so hard to find. It's literally right under your nose. It's also why creatives, or many people, have a hard time charging the highest amount for that thing, because it comes so easy to them. But that's the point. The thing that comes easy to you is a really good chance it does not come easy to 90% of the population. It is incredibly easy to me to actually understand other people's secret language. I can tap into other people's ways of thinking. You know, I had somebody ask me recently, why do I think I'm able to do that? And I was like, well, if I look at the history of my life, which again, I had said earlier about the why and what's the proof. My proof of my why is that I have lived life on the opposite sides of many fences. And because of that, I actually I can hold a whole variety of perspectives without judgment. So it's a very easy gift of mine to transport myself into somebody else's shoes and see what the world looks like from them, because I'm very not judgmental about that. Now, hey, sure, it took me a while to own that. And once I did, then I can leverage it and I can turn it into a business and I can charge a lot of money for it. So that's one of my suggestions to your listeners, is your core skill set is probably right underneath your nose. One thing you can do is think about, what is it that people have commented on or complimented you for throughout the years that you probably have brushed off and taken for granted? But so many people have acknowledged in you that, wow, you're a really good listener. Or, man, you really, I said to a friend of mine recently, I pointed out to her, I said, you know, I've realized that you're always the go-to person for me when I need somebody to make some clarity out of confusion. And I said to her, I want you to do something with that. I'll bet I'm not the only person that needs you to do that for them. Right? But I realized she was the friend I always call upon when I'm confused, because she has a way of culling through what I'm saying and making it clear. That's so easy for her. And I asked her, I said, have you heard that from other people? She goes, oh gosh, people tell me that all the time. And I'm like, well, then you need to show up in the world doing that for people. There's a business model to be created around that.
There sure is. And this is it's a very powerful message. So with that in mind, who do you know personally who has been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Gosh, boy, I can think of a couple people. You know, I guess I'll give you one that's more relatable. But I also just want to mention, I just spent yesterday or 2 days ago in New York City shopping with a friend of mine. And I feel like she's smashing a plateau. I mean, she's a performer. She's a former Rockette. She's really stepping up and going to hit new levels in her business next year. So I think that's very exciting. But I think in answer to your question, I'll talk about the author Michael Port. And he'll probably be surprised that I'm mentioning him in this in regard. But I've interviewed Michael twice on my podcast. I've come to know him as a friend. He's also my trainer as a speaker. So I reach out to Michael and his team to train me as a speaker. And now this is a guy who started as an actor and somehow translated his acting and his skill set into writing amazingly popular business books. You know, Book Yourself Solid is a tremendously successful book. And that, of course, leveraged his career as a business speaker and a very high demand in demand keynote speaker. All these years later, he has his new direction in his career is called Heroic Public Speaking, where he's training people to be better speakers, which actually goes right back to his roots as an actor. When I interviewed him the second time, it was for the launch of his program, Heroic Public Speaking. And the first thing I had said to him, I said, what took you so long to come home? Right? I totally respect, how can you not respect the success of Book Yourself Solid and who he was as a business author. But I was curious, like, what took you so long to come home? Like, it makes perfect sense to me that this man and his team and his wife, Amy, it makes perfect sense to me that they're training people to be better public speakers because they're actors and they know how to break through your nervousness. They know how to use the skills of performance to raise the bar of public speaking. I mean, their own slogan is change the world one speech at a time, right? And they're out to do that. So Michael, to me, represents a guy who's continually smashing the plateau. And in doing so, it's a process of personal development, which I think is always what's responsible for smashing the plateau. I think in a lot of ways, he smashed a whole new plateau and has gotten to all new levels because he returned home to such a core skill set of who he is as an actor that he now can serve a countless number of people and truly change the world by improving the quality of public speeches, one speech at a time.
And having watched him do it, he's phenomenal at it.
He's unbelievable. And, you know, I've like I said, he's who I've done large coaching groups with him, and I've done, very small, intimate groups of six and received his coaching. And yeah, he's amazing on stage, and he's an even more amazing trainer. To me, he represents somebody who's just continually smashing the plateau.
Yeah, he sure is. Jeffrey, what can we look forward to in the near future from you?
Well, in 2017, I believe my first book will be released. It's written. It's in the hands of the editor. It needs more rewriting than I thought it would. So we're at a little bit of a pause. But you know, it's probably just going to put me behind a couple of months. So I'm hoping by summer of 2017, the book will be released. I am self-publishing it because I wanted to control the timing. So I'm glad I did. Along with that, I am looking to step out from behind the mic. 2.5 years of building my podcast, which I love and will continue for the foreseeable future. But I also want to step out from behind the mic. I enjoy being on stage. I'm actually quite effective at being on stage. I love the rapport with an audience. I see myself still as an introvert and an extremely shy person, which is something I dealt with throughout my youth up until my mid-20s. And yet the thing I enjoy the most is standing on stage, because it's not about staying on stage. It's about communication. It's about the reciprocity of an audience. And it's the biggest high I know of in my life because of them. It has nothing to do with me. So I am looking to step up my game as a speaker and be out there a whole lot more in 2017.
That's great. So with that in mind, Jeffrey, how can listeners follow you, learn more about you, and if there's an opportunity to hear you speak, where can they do it?
So probably the best community website that I offer is creativewarriorsunite.com. And I say community website because I actually don't look at it as a website. I look at it as where my community gathers. That's where my podcast is. I put up as much free content as I can. We have a great and vibrant Facebook group. You can join the Facebook group on creativewarriorsunite.com as well. I'm very active in the Facebook group. So that's where we gather. That's why it's called Creative Warriors Unite. So anything I'm up to, speaking or what have you, will always be posted there.
Oh, great. Well, Jeffrey, it's been really rewarding having you on the show today, talking about how you have smashed the plateau, how you help others smash the plateau, and I'm really grateful that you've taken time to be with us today. My guest today has been Chief Creative Warrior Jeffrey Shaw. Thank you again, Jeffrey, for joining us.
Thank you, David. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.